My real name is Jennings, I said. But the kids always make fun of it.
Jennings? Jennings is a nice name. Why do they make fun of it?
I don't know, they just do. They haven't made fun of Michael, so I'll keep it.
Sal pulled the bus up to my stop. I got off. I'll see you tomorrow, Jennings. He smiled.
All right, Sal. I'll see you tomorrow.
I sat behind or across from Sal every morning after that. I even started seeing him in the afternoons. I stopped in the church after my extra lesson to see St. Michael, and then I waited for Sal's bus. I managed to pay Michael the 6 cents over a period of a few weeks.
How's my son this afternoon? Sal asked as I climbed aboard his bus.
I learned to spell 3 new words today, I told him.
3 new words, he shouted.
He stopped the bus and turned his head around to me and the other passengers.
Did you hear that?
He boomed out with pride.
My son learned 3 new words today.
Everyone applauded. I was embarrassed, but I liked it.
How's your mother and all your brothers? He asked.
All right. Larry started going to school again. He hates it. And George, I don't know about George.
What's the matter with him?
He's drinking a whole lot, more than I ever seen before. I don't know what's wrong with him.
Did you ask him?
Are you kidding? I can't talk to him. Nobody can. When Mom tries, he gets real mad.
How about Walter?
He wouldn't talk to him. They hate each other.
I didn't mean that. I just meant, how is he?
Oh, I don't see him very much. He's always in school.
What's he going to be?
I don't know. I never asked him.
What do you want to be?
Nobody had ever asked me that before.
A man, I guess.
He laughed.
I know you want to be a man, but what kind of work do you want to do?
I know you meant that, I said. I don't know. Maybe a bus driver.
He laughed loudly. I liked Sal. I looked forward to seeing him every day and talking to him. I began to miss him on weekends when I didn't take the bus. I knew I could talk to Sal about anything. He always listened to me, and he always answered my questions. One Saturday afternoon, Larry, Jean, and I were coming home from the movies. We were playing Follow the Leader. Jean, of course, was having a hard time keeping up with us. Larry and I decided to stop and wait for him. While we were waiting, I saw a boy kick a shoebox into the street.
I think I'll see what's in the box, I said.
Probably nothing. He wouldn't kick it away if there was anything good inside, Larry said.
Well, it looks like a good box. I might be able to use it for something.
I ran across the roadway to retrieve the box. I shook it and listened. I heard a mew. I quickly opened the box and found a kitten. He couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 days old.
Hey, Larry, it's a cat.
Oh, yeah?
He ran over to me.
Let me see.
I showed him the cat.
Boy, he's little, he said. He sure is. I'm going to take him home to show Mom.
What about Jean?
Wait for him, will you?
I didn't give Larry time to answer me. I just dashed off. I ran all the way home. I pushed open the kitchen door.
Ma!
I hollered.
In here, dear.
She spoke softly from her bedroom. I poked my head in. Mom was in bed.
What's the matter? I don't feel well, dear. Did you like the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Did Gene behave himself? He went to sleep. What do you think? Where is he?
Oh, I almost forgot. I found a pussycat.
I opened the box and showed her the cat.
He looks terrible. Where did you find him?
He looks okay.
No, dear, he doesn't. He needs his mother. Where did you get him?
This kid was kicking the box around.
He was inside.
That's terrible.
Poor little thing.
Mom told me how to feed him with an eyedropper and told me to keep him warm. I was feeding him when Larry and Jean came in.
Can I feed him?
Jean asked.
No.
Ma! Jennings won't let me feed the cat!
He cried as he ran into her bedroom.
What are you going to call him?
Larry asked.
Well, he's black. I'll call him Midnight.
Larry petted Midnight while I tried to feed him.
He only needed one finger to pet him, he was so little. Midnight licked off the drop of milk from the end of the eyedropper with his tiny little tongue. I bundled him up in a face cloth and put him back in the box.
Mom's gonna buy me my own cat, so there,
Jean said. He then stuck out his tongue and dashed from the kitchen again.
I liked him better when he slept all the time, Larry said.
Me too.
Larry made soup for all of us, but Mom didn't want any. She said it would just upset her stomach.
Should I give some to Midnight?
I asked.
Oh, no, she said. He's a cat. Cats don't eat soup, especially a tiny baby. Can I take him to school Monday to show Sal and Sister Gerard? I think you should see how he is by then.
All right,
I said.
I left her to help Larry with the dishes. We finished up in the kitchen and went into the bedroom. I took Midnight with me.
Can I sleep with him?
Jean asked.
No, he's too little. You'll crush him.
No, I won't. I'll sleep light. Then if I fall on him, I won't crush him. That's not what light sleep means, dummy,
Larry said. I bundled Midnight up against Doggy.
You'll have to keep him warm, all right, Doggy?
I kissed them both and got into bed.
Did he answer you?
Larry asked.
Sure. He said he would.
Larry shook his head.
This whole place is going nuts. Jean wants to sleep light so he won't weigh anything, and you talk to stuffed animals, and they answer you.
I woke early Sunday morning. Rain was falling hard against the window. I laid my head back against the pillow when I remembered Midnight. I jumped out of bed and went over to the chair where he and Doggy were sleeping. I pushed back the face cloth and lifted him up.
Good morning, little Midnight,
I said. I kissed his fur. I turned him in my hand so I could see his little face. His eyes were closed, and his body was limp. He was dead.
Oh, God, no,
I cried. I kissed him a whole bunch of times.
Please don't be dead. Oh, please don't be dead.
What's the matter?
Larry asked.
Midnight's dead,
I cried. The whole house was in disorder. Larry and Jean and I were crying. Mom got up from her bed, even though she was sick, to settle everyone down. She fixed a small box by lining it with a handkerchief. She told us to bury Midnight in the front yard. Larry and I made a cross for the top of Midnight's grave. We got Jean's shovel from his pail and shovel set, and we went into the yard. I let Jean hold Doggy. We dug the grave and put Midnight in. We covered him over and set the cross in the ground. I couldn't believe my love for him didn't keep him alive. I would have taken good care of him. The tears on my face were mixed with the heavily falling rain, but it didn't matter. I don't think it mattered to Larry or Jean either. We were all very upset. Inside, I lay down with Doggy in my arms. He was dripping wet, but I didn't care. I fell asleep feeling very helpless.
You look like you lost your best friend, Sal said to me the next morning.
I did,
I mumbled.
Why, son? What happened?
I sat behind Sal and told him all about Midnight.
You know, son, just loving something or someone like Midnight isn't enough. He was neglected and mistreated long before you found him. By then, it was too late.
But I really loved him, Sal.
My eyes filled.
I know you did, but it was too late. All the love in the world wouldn't have saved him.
I sat in silence as the bus rumbled down Main Street.
Before he died, he knew you were his friend.
Do you think so?
Of course he did. And isn't that all that really matters now? The fact that he knew you loved him, and he knew you were his friend?
Sal made me feel a little better. Before I left his bus, he gave me a big hug.
I'll see you tonight, he said. And cheer up.
He smiled. I got off the bus and thanked him for talking to me. He winked and closed the door. He drove off. I walked up the hill, thinking about all the things Sal had said to me. When I reached school, I went straight to class. I didn't feel much like standing around in the schoolyard. Sister Gerard was at her desk.
Well, you're here early, she said.
Yes, sister.
Don't you feel well?
Yes, sister,
I sighed.
I feel all right. I mean, I'm not sick or anything like that. I just feel a little sad because my cat died.
Oh, that's terrible, she said.
She stood up and put her arms around me. I cried into her. She didn't call on me all morning or afternoon. I think she knew my mind was wandering from time to time, and she didn't want to embarrass me. Sister Gerard was like that. She was kind. Late in the afternoon, a boy came into the room from one of the other classes. He handed Sister Gerard a note.
"Continue to read to yourselves," she told everyone in the class.
"Michael," she called. I looked up to see if she wanted me. She did.
"Will you take this note down to Sister Regina for me, please?"
She handed me a folded piece of paper.
"Sure, sister. Should I wait for an answer?"
"Yes, please," she smiled. I left the room and went down to the principal's office. Sister Regina was in her office talking to a gray-haired man in a dark overcoat. I waited outside.
"Jennings,"
she called from her office.
"Yes, sister. I have a note for you,"
I said as I walked in. I was a little surprised she remembered my real name. But then she was the principal and always seemed to know everything.
"Sit down, will you, Jennings? This is Mr. Fraser."
"Hello, sir," I said. I sat down.
"Jennings," she said, "your mother was rushed to the hospital with pneumonia."
"Oh, no." I didn't want to hear what was coming next.
"I'm sorry, son," Mr. Fraser said.
"Mr. Fraser has agreed to let you stay with him until your mother is better. Is that all right?"
I didn't answer her. I was thinking about Mom and going away again. Maybe if she hadn't gotten up to help us with midnight. Oh, gosh.
"Jennings?"
she said. I raised my head just a little. I didn't want the tears I was fighting off to fall.
"If you stay with Mr. Fraser," she said, "you won't have to disrupt your schooling. You can continue with us without any interruptions."
Oh, yes, sister. All right. I couldn't believe I was going away again. For some reason, I just sort of put going away out of my mind and forgot about it. That was a mistake. I should never do that again, I thought. Oh, gosh, I don't even have Doggy with me. What am I going to do? I lost the battle with my tears. They fell all over the back of my hand. I buried my face in my hands. Sister Regina put her arms around me and hugged me. Oh, gosh. First little midnight, and now Mom. Why?
Chapter 9. Mr. Fraser turned off the main road and pulled up to a tiny little white house. A man in a brown uniform stuck his head out the door and waved to us. We waved back.
"Who's that?"
I asked.
"That's Fred,"
Mr. Fraser said, "the security guard." We passed through a set of tall iron gates. The gravel from the roadway made a steady sound against the bottom of the car.
"Are we at some kind of a home or something?"
I asked.
"No, son. Why?"
"Well, the iron gates and Fred."
"No,"
he patted my leg. "We're in Briar Manor. I live here. Fred is there to see that no one comes in who doesn't live here."
"Will he let me in?"
"Of course. Aren't you going to live here?"
No, sir."
"No?"
"No. I'm just going to stay here."
"Well, it's the same thing."
"No, it's not. My brother Jerome said staying somewhere and living somewhere was different."
"He's right, son. You're just going to stay here until your mom is better. I'll tell Fred to make an exception in your case and let you in."
We passed many large and beautiful houses. Some of them had long white columns in front. Others had bunches of tall trees and neatly trimmed bushes. All of them were pretty. I looked over at Mr. Fraser. His clothes were nice and neat. He was wearing a watch and a ring. He must be rich, I thought. I looked at my own raggy clothes, then did my best to shrink into the seat. I remembered all the rich kids at St. Benedict's and how mean they were to me. I began to get a little nervous. Mr. Fraser seemed kind enough.
Maybe all rich people aren't mean. Maybe they're like the nuns at the homes. Some are mean, and some are nice. He pulled the car into a driveway and stopped.
Here we are, he said.
His house was beautiful. It was all gray stone with blue and white trim. There was a birdbath on the front lawn. There was a large boat off to one side of the driveway.
Is that your boat? I asked.
My eyes were wide open at the sight of it. I had never seen a boat before, except in the movies or in magazine pictures.
No, son, he said. That one belongs to my daughter, Nancy. She's away at college right now. My boat is kept at the marina.
How did she sail it into the driveway?
She didn't sail it there, he laughed. We brought it in by trailer.
We got out of the car.
What's a marina?
That's a place where they keep boats when you're not using them.
Oh, I see. Then this is not a driveway. It's a marina.
He laughed again.
I had forgotten what it was like to talk to a 9-year-old, he said. We'll straighten it all out later. Right now, Martha is waiting for us, and I have to get back to work.
He held my hand as we walked up to the front door. The door opened, and a short, heavy-set lady stepped out. She had gray hair that was all pulled back and tied in a knot. Her cheeks were round and rosy. On the bridge of her pug little nose sat a pair of wire-rimmed glasses. She was wearing a green and white flowery dress and a white apron with two big red roses on it. She reminded me of a large bouquet of flowers.
Hello, Martha, he said. This is Jennings.
She smiled a wonderful smile and pinched my cheek.
Well now, Master Jennings, she said. You sure are the cutest little boy I ever did see.
She laughed. My face flushed.
Hello, Mrs. Fraser.
Land sakes, no, she laughed. I'm Martha. I keeps the house round here. You'll see Mrs. Fraser at dinner time.
Oh, I thought you were Mrs. Fraser.
Mrs. Fraser is shopping, Mr. Fraser said. You go along with Martha. She'll show you to your room and get you settled. I'll see you later.
Mr. Fraser walked back to his car while Martha and I went into the house. The front room was like walking into one of Mom's magazines. A great stone fireplace set between two windows had a roaring fire blazing away.
Come along now, Martha said.
As we crossed the room, Martha started to take off my coat. I let her.
Are you sleepwalking, boy?
She laughed.
No, ma'am, I said. I just never saw anything like this room before.
She laughed again. Aside from all the couches, chairs, and tables, there was a beautiful white piano in front of a whole wall of glass doors. In the dining room, there was a shiny table with all the chairs set neatly around it. A ceiling lamp made of 1,000 tiny pieces of glass hung just above the table.
Does anybody eat in here? I asked.
Land sakes! She laughed. Of course they do, every night.
Gosh.
She took me through a hallway into a bedroom. The room was all blue and green. The curtains were the same as the bed, all flowery and fluffy.
This is your room, she said.
My room.
I thought she was just showing me around the house.
Over here's your bathroom.
She pushed open a small door and switched on a light. It really was a bathroom. Who would have believed it?
I never saw a bathroom in the bedroom before, I said.
I never did either, till I started working here.
She winked and laughed. I liked Martha. She was a jolly lady. She reminded me a little of Sal and a little of Sister Anne Catherine at St. Teresa's. I liked the way she laughed. She slid open what I thought was a frosted glass wall. It was a bathtub.
Wow, would you look at that, I said.
Do you take showers or baths, she asked.
Baths. I never took a shower, except in homes, or at a swimming pool. You know, before you go in the water, you gotta take a shower.
Well, you can take a shower here if you like.
Oh, I'd like that, I smiled. When can I take a shower?
Anytime you want to.
Well, when does Mr. Fraser use the bathroom?
Land sakes, she laughed. This is your bathroom.
Mr. Fraser has his own bathroom.
Really?
She laughed again as she made her way to the door.
Well, I got a lot of work to do in the kitchen, she said. I'll let you freshen up.
She closed the door as she left. After I looked all around the bathroom and bedroom, I sat at the edge of the bed and watched the sun completely set. As it did, the room darkened with it.
What you doing in the dark?
Martha said as she came back into the room. She switched on the lights.
I thought you'd come into the kitchen and keeps me company.
I didn't know I was allowed to leave the room.
What?
She snapped. There was anger in her voice.
While you is in this house, she stammered, you could go anywhere as you want. You hears, Martha?
Yes, ma'am.
Now come along to the kitchen.
Land sakes,
she mumbled. She led the way from the bedroom into the kitchen. There were counters everywhere. Sinks, a stove, an icebox, and lots of tables.
This is really a big house, Martha.
It surely is. I'm glad Martha ain't gots to clean it up,
she laughed.
Would you likes to help me peel some taters?
She asked.
Oh, yeah.
She set me down at a table with some newspaper and a potato peeler and potatoes.
Do you help your mother at home?
Uh-huh. Not peeling potatoes, though. We don't have potatoes, except for special times.
What do you eat most of the time?
Oh, soup. Sometimes spaghetti or shells. Sometimes frankfurters or hamburgers. Stuff like that.
Well, she said, I'd like to make something you likes sometime.
I like pancakes.
Not for dinner, she laughed.
No?
No. Pancakes is for breakfast. I'll make them for you tomorrow.
I don't hardly eat breakfast, ma'am.
You don't eat breakfast?
But breakfast is important. It helps you get big and strong.
Don't you wants to get big and strong?
Oh, sure. But we don't got that much food around our house to eat breakfast.
Land sakes,
she mumbled. Martha set the table in the dining room with all sorts of things, glasses and plates and lots of silverware.
Why so many forks and spoons?
I asked.
Well, some of the spoons are for soup. Some are for dessert or for coffee. Some of the forks are for salad, and the others for the main course.
How do you know which is which?
Watch Mr. Fraser. Whatever he do, you do.
I helped her with the rest of the table, and then sat where she told me to. Mr. Fraser was the first one into the room. He sat at the head of the table, in a chair with arms. He set down a stack of mail he had brought in with him. Well, Jennings, are you getting all settled in? He asked.
Yes, sir. You sure have a nice house here.
Well, thank you, Jennings. I'm glad we can share it with you.
Hello, dear, a lady said as she came into the room. She leaned down and kissed Mr. Fraser's cheek. I was sure this was Mrs. Fraser. How was your day? He asked.
Don't ask, she said. She took a seat at the far end of the table opposite him. She leaned her head back for a moment.
Where's Donald?
She asked. Who knows, he said. He didn't look up from his mail. She was a very pretty lady. Her hair was black and fell to her shoulders. Her face was thin and all made up with powder and rouge. She wore lots of jewelry, rings and bracelets and necklaces. She looked like a department store.
Martha,
she called out over her shoulder to the door leading to the kitchen. Martha pushed open the door with her back. She was carrying a large tray of soup.
Yes, ma'am. Where's Donald?
She asked.
I don't know, ma'am. I told him to be home here by 6. I told him we was gonna have a guest.
Well, never mind, she said. Serve the soup.
Martha went around the table, pouring the soup into each of the bowls. Mrs. Fraser spoke to me.
You don't talk very much, do you?
Before I could answer her, Mr. Fraser interrupted.
Well, the way you come barreling in here.
He put his mail down. You probably scared the hell out of him.
I did not.
You did so, he said. All that concerns you is that damn kid.
Well, I'd like to know where my son is. Is that so frightening?
She asked.
And I'll thank you not to refer to Donald as that damn kid.
He huffed at her last remark.
You could have at least said hello to Jennings when you came in.
I was getting to that.
She turned to me.
Hello, Jennings.
Do I frighten you?
No, ma'am. There, you see?
She sneered.
I didn't frighten him.
What did you expect him to say?
You're impossible.
She began to eat her soup. I watched which spoon she used, and used the same kind. I was nearing the bottom of the bowl when Martha brought in another tray. This one had all the things I had helped her with. She placed the tray at the edge of the table and began removing the bowls and plates of meat and vegetables. I never saw so much food at one time, except for Thanksgiving, maybe.
Hi, Mom,
a boy said as he burst into the room. He plopped himself down on the chair across from me.
Where were you, Donald? You're late.
Out,
he said. He swiped a piece of meat off the platter and stuffed it into his mouth. Donald was about the same age as Walter, 15. His face was pimply as well as dirty. His straw-like brown hair jutted out in all directions from under a worn and tattered Yankee baseball cap. His clothes were as raggy as mine. His shirt was wrinkled and tucked in only on one side of his pants. He swiped another piece of meat from the platter with his dirty hands and stuffed it into his mouth.
"Don't you ever wash?" Mr. Fraser asked.
"Sure I do," he said. "Hey, Mom, I'm going fishing tomorrow."
"You have school tomorrow," his father said.
"I know. I'm going down to the pier before school." "Why not take Jennings with you?" Mrs. Fraser said. "I'm sure he'd love to go."
"Who's Jennings?"
"The boy sitting across from you, stupid."
"Charles, don't speak to your son that way."
"Well, who the hell did he think Jennings was?"
"Well, that's still no way to talk to your son."
Mr. Fraser mumbled something into the back of his hand.
"Donald, this is Jennings. He's going to stay with us for a while," she said.
"He ain't gonna stay in my room. I don't want no damn kid sharing my room."
"He's going to stay in one of the guest rooms. Now say hello."
"Hello," he mumbled into his plate.
"Hi,"
I said. The room fell silent. Only the tinkling of silverware against the plates and some strange gurgling sounds coming from Donald could be heard. He was annoying his father, but Mr. Fraser didn't say a word. He just looked over at him from time to time and shook his head. Martha poked her head in from the kitchen.
"Would you like salad tonight, ma'am?"
she asked.
"Yes, Martha,"
Mrs. Fraser said. Martha pulled her head back into the kitchen and the door closed.
"Doesn't Martha eat?"
I asked.
"The help don't eat in here," Donald snarled. "She eats the leftover scraps in the kitchen, like a dog."
He laughed.
"Donald!"
his mother snapped.
"Be nice."
Mr. Fraser just looked over at him and shook his head one more time.
"Well, she does eat in the kitchen,"
Donald defended himself. I felt sorry for Martha. I wished I could eat in the kitchen with her. We finished dinner and everyone left the table. I stayed where I was. I wanted to help Martha with the dishes.
"What you doing in here all by yourself?"
she said as she came in from the kitchen.
"I was waiting to help you."
"Well, now, that's right kind of you to want to help poor old Martha, but you needn't bother yourself."
"It's no bother. I like helping you."
I cleared the dishes with her. I stacked them up on one of the counters near the sink.
"Martha, do you eat leftover scraps?"
"Mercy, no,"
she laughed.
"Where did you get such a notion?"
"Oh, nowhere. I was just wondering."
"I'll bet it was Master Donald who put such things in your head,"
she laughed.
"He's a bad one, he is."
I didn't answer her with words. I twisted my foot into the kitchen floor instead.
"Now you listen to Martha," she said. "I'm the cooks around here. I always saves the best pieces for myself, and then I serves the rest of the family."
She broke up laughing.
"That Master Donald."
She shook her head and chuckled.
"Hey,"
she suddenly remembered something.
"If and you was going fishing in the morning, you'd best get yourself to bed."
"I've never been fishing, Martha. Have you?"
"Land sakes, no," she chuckled. "You ain't never gonna get my bones out of bed at no 4 o'clock in the morning. Lessen, of course, my money pouch is burning."
She began to laugh harder. I reached over and pulled Martha's hand from the counter. I kissed it and scurried from the kitchen. I could still hear her laughing as I went down the hall toward the bedroom. I lay at the very edge of the bed so I could look out the window. The sky was dark, but the moon was bright. It wasn't quite full, but almost. I was glad it wasn't. George always tried to scare Larry and me when the moon was full. He said werewolves came out and bit you. I didn't believe him, but it was a good idea to be careful, you know, just in case. I could see the tall trees on the far side of the yard. They looked more gray than green in the light of the moon. I was thinking about Mom. I wondered how she was, and if I was the one who made her sick. I wished now she hadn't gotten up when Midnight died. Poor little Midnight. Doggy would really like this room, I thought. I know he'd like Martha. I wish I knew some way of getting him. Maybe I could ask Sister Gerard. Or maybe I could ask Sal. Oh, gosh, Sal. I won't be taking his bus anymore. I won't get to see him or talk to him. Oh, gosh. First Midnight, and then Mom, and now Doggy and Sal. I wonder why everyone I love always has to go away from me. I turn my face into the pillow.
Hey, get up if you're coming with me,
Donald yelled. I pulled my head from under the pillow.
I'll be in the kitchen, he said. Hurry up.
I staggered to my feet in a daze. I was still asleep. I had a battle with my left eye. It kept closing on me. I needed some water to help me win. I flipped on the light of the little bathroom.
Egad!
It nearly blinded me. I found the water and woke myself up.
If this is what it's like to go fishing, why does anyone go?
I mumbled. I finished up in the bathroom and got dressed. I met Donald in the kitchen.
If you want anything, get it, he snarled. But hurry up.
No, I'm all right.
He picked up an old dented pail with one hand and the fishing poles with the other. He pushed open the pantry door with his foot.
Let's go,
he said, as the door slammed behind him. I glanced up at the kitchen clock before I slipped out the door. It read 4:10. Wow. I thought. I was never up at this hour before. I was starting to get really excited about my first time fishing.
Are you sure the fish will be awake by now?
I asked.
Fish don't sleep, stupid.
Never?
Never. They take naps once in a while, but they never sleep.
Gee, I didn't know that. I wonder how they can stay awake so long.
Did you ever try to sleep underwater?
He asked. We reached a rise in the road. The rest of the way was downhill. There, at the bottom, breaking the darkness of night, were dozens of tiny lights shimmering off the water. To my left, I saw a long string of green lights that seemed to stretch for miles.
What's that?
I asked.
What? All those green lights.
That's the Whitestone Bridge.
Oh, wow. I never saw a bridge.
You never saw a bridge? Where have you been?
I don't know. I just wasn't anywhere around a bridge, that's all.
When we got to the bottom of the hill, I could see a long wooden pier jutting straight out into the water. Our feet made a clomping sound against the old, thick boards of the pier. We reached the end, and Donald set the pail down.
This is it, he said.
It's beautiful,
I said.
What?
He looked out at what I was looking at and shrugged his shoulders. I stared out at the shimmering lights against the water and the wide open space that lay in front of me. It is beautiful, I thought. Donald handed me a pole.
I'm not going to bother teaching you how to cast, he said. Just drop the line straight down.
He helped me unreel my line. I was fishing for the first time. I was very excited.
I hope I catch something, I said.
Well, don't expect much the first time, he said. He filled the old pail by lowering it down to the water with a rope.
What's the water for?
I asked.
That's to put the fish in, just in case we catch any. This way they stay fresh.
I stood by the wooden rail with one foot on top of the other and waited. Donald did the same. As the morning sun began to rise, I could see more and more things. I saw a long row of boats all tied together.
Look at all those boats,
I said. Shh, Donald said with his fingers to his lips.
That's the marina,
he whispered.
Oh, that's where your father keeps his boat,
I also whispered.
That's right,
he again whispered.
Why are we whispering?
I asked.
We'll scare the fish away if we don't,
he said.
Oh.
Donald's reel began to spin with a whine.
I got one!
He shouted. I was so excited. His pole bent as the fish took his line. My eyes were wide open. He reeled in the line and bent the pole. He did it again and again until he pulled up the fish and swung it over to the pail.
It's a shark!
I shrieked.
You caught a shark!
I had seen sharks in the movies, so I knew what they looked like. But I always thought they were bigger. This one was about 10 inches long.
It's a sand shark, he said. I'll throw him back.
No, don't do that,
I said.
I want him. But it's only a sand shark. I catch them all the time.
Oh, but I want him. Can I have him?
Donald chuckled slightly, but didn't say anything. He unhooked the sand shark and slipped him into the pail. I sat back on my heels and watched the fish swim around in the pail.
You better watch your line, he said.
Oh, yeah.
I jumped back to the rail. I was more determined now than ever. I wanted to catch something, too. Suddenly, there was a tug at my line.
I got something,
I shouted.
Hook him, he ordered. Pull up and hook him.
I did. I pulled up hard, and he was hooked. The reel spun in my hand. Donald shouted orders to me, and I followed. I dipped the pole down and reeled as I pulled it up. I did it again and again. I'm sure I got his orders all backward, but I got the fish. As I started to pull him up, Donald grabbed hold of the line and helped. He pulled the line, hand over hand, and landed the fish on the pier. It was really big, much too big to fit in the pail.
It's a striper, he said.
A striper? Is that a good one?
I asked.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's not as good as a shark, but it's only your first time.
Maybe next time I'll get a shark, I said.
Yeah, maybe,
Donald said as he started taking apart the fishing poles.
Are we leaving?
I asked.
Sure. We gotta go to school.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I sure wish we had more time,
I said.
Maybe I could catch a shark now.
I got an idea, he said. How much money do you have?
Money?
I patted my pockets.
I don't got no money.
Oh, well.
He went into deep thought.
Well, what?
I asked.
What?
He sighed a great sigh.
Since you're poor, he said, I'll let you have the shark for nothing.
Really?
I said.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I looked into the pail at my shark.
It's too bad you don't have anything to give me, he said. You know, sort of like a trade.
Well,
I thought for a moment.
How about my striper? You can have my striper. I know it's not as good as a shark, but...
Okay, let's trade fish, he said. You say you caught the shark, and I'll say I caught the striper.
Is that all right to do?
Sure, it's done all the time. We went fishing together, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well then, I'll just tell everyone you caught the better fish. That's all.
Donald slung the striper over his shoulder and then lifted the poles.
Come on, he said. Grab the pail.
I took up the pail with both hands and followed him off the pier. As I walked, I watched my shark swimming around. I couldn't wait to show Martha and tell some of the kids in my class. We walked back up the hill toward the house. The pail kept getting heavier and heavier.
Hey, wait for me,
I called out. He had gotten so far ahead of me, I thought I might not find the house if I lost him. I nearly caught up to him when he started walking again.
Hey, wait for me.
The house is right there,
he said as he pointed up the road. It was. I struggled with the pail, setting it down every so often. By the time I had gotten to the pantry door, Donald was long gone. I brought the pail and my shark into the kitchen.
What you got there?
Martha asked as she peered into the pail.
A shark,
We caught a shark.
A shark? What's you want with a shark? You can't eat him. Eat him? I don't want to eat him. I want to keep him. You know, for a pet.
A pet? She chuckled. Now I thinks I heard everything. A shark for a pet. Well, sit him down in the pantry and get yourself ready for school. Donald is going to show where to get the bus.
I put the pail and my shark in the pantry and started down the hall for the bedroom. I heard Martha laughing.
Land sakes, what'll he think of next?
Donald showed me where to catch my bus. I climbed aboard and showed the driver my school pass. I sat down across from him and thought about Sal. I was really going to miss him. The Frasers lived in a different direction than I did, so there was no way for me to take Sal's bus anymore. Sure, I could talk to Sister Gerard or to Martha, but talking to them just wouldn't be the same. I couldn't tell them how I was feeling or what I was thinking, not the way I could to Sal. I got off the bus and walked up the hill to school. I went into the yard. The schoolyard was filled with kids from all the different grades. Each grade had an area where they lined up when the bell rang. I went to the area of my class. I sat at the base of the tall black fence that bordered the yard, and I watched the kids play. They were playing tag. Eddie Keegan was playing with them. Eddie was the boy who sat next to me in class. He was really the only one in school I ever talked to outside of Sister Gerard. I borrowed paper from him sometimes, or asked him the answer to a question I didn't know. He would always lend me the paper or answer the question, but he never talked more than that. I guess he never really wanted to be friends with me.
"Hey, Eddie,"
I called as he ran past me. He stopped and backed up to me. He kept his eye on the kid who was it. He didn't want to get tagged.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"I went fishing this morning."
"Fishing?
This morning?"
"Yep."
"Where?"
"In the water, near the Whitestone Bridge,"
I said proudly. He sort of looked at me funny, like he didn't believe me.
"I did,"
I said.
"I really did."
"Oh, yeah? What did you catch?"
"A shark,"
I said. I knew he'd be impressed by that.
"A shark?"
"Uh-huh,"
I smiled.
"Hey, everybody,"
he shouted to the others.
"Listen to this. Birch caught a shark."
The kids stopped playing tag and gathered around me.
"Birch went fishing this morning and caught a shark,"
Eddie told them. I stood there, proud and smiling, but not for long. They started to laugh at me. None of them believed me.
"I did,"
I insisted.
"I have him in a pail." "A pail?"
One of them laughed.
"You put a shark in a pail?"
I was embarrassed. They laughed and laughed. They began to make fish faces at me and call me a liar. I left the yard and went into school. I knew Sister Gerard was in the classroom, so I stayed in the hallway just outside the door. I didn't want her to see me crying. The kids teased me before the class got underway, but I did my best to close them out. I made believe I was in the dining room at St. Teresa's. At lunchtime, when all the kids left for the lunchroom, I stayed behind as usual. But this time I had something to eat. I took out a sandwich and an apple. Martha had made me a bologna sandwich with butter and lettuce.
Ech!
I took off the lettuce and scraped off the butter as best I could. I wasn't used to eating butter or lettuce, so I didn't like it very much. While I was drawing a picture of Doggy and Midnight, the kids started to return from lunch.
"Shark! Shark!"
one of them yelled.
"Don't touch Birch's inkwell,"
someone else said.
"You might lose a finger."
Sister Gerard came into the classroom and the teasing stopped. She gave out a reading assignment.
"Michael,"
Sister Gerard called.
"Yes, sister?"
I folded up the paper as I got to my feet. She waved her finger for me to come up to her. I was sure she'd caught me drawing.
"Yes, sister?"
"Your brother brought you some clothes," she whispered. "They're over at the convent. Remind me after your lesson this afternoon."
"Yes, sister." "Which brother?"
"George."
"Oh, okay. Thank you."
I started toward my seat.
"And Michael?"
"Yes?"
I turned back.
Don't draw when you're supposed to be reading.
After my extra lesson, Sister Gerard gave me a shopping bag.
I think you should see if he brought you everything you need, she said.
I started to take everything out of the bag. There was a pair of pants and a shirt. Two socks that didn't match, but they were okay. They didn't have any holes in them. A pair of underpants. And Doggy.
Oh, Doggy,
I cried. I hugged him up to my cheek. Sister Gerard smiled and left the room.
Hi, Doggy. I'm so glad to see you. I was afraid I wouldn't be seeing you again for a long time.
I hugged him again.
That was really nice of George to remember you.
I repacked the shopping bag, leaving Doggy's head sticking out the top. I left the convent and went up to the church to visit St. Michael. I stopped just outside the front door.
Now, Doggy, I said, we're going into church to see St. Michael. He's my guardian angel. He might scare you a little at first, but he's actually very nice.
I took Doggy into church to see St. Michael. I knelt by his altar.
Hi, St. Michael,
I said. I looked up at his peaceful face.
This is Doggy. I know I'm a little too big to have a stuffed dog, but he's not just a stuffed dog. He's my friend. Ever since the home of the angels, when I first got Doggy, I haven't been able to think of him any other way but my friend. I promised Sister Claire I'd always love him and take care of him. I will. He's one of those special animals, you know? The kind Sister Claire never wanted to find lying by the wayside.
I left the church and headed down the hill to meet Sal's bus. I waited for a little while, but then it came rumbling along. He stopped and opened his doors.
Hi, son. Where were you this morning?
I couldn't take your bus, I said.
Well, come on.
He made a sweeping gesture with his hand for me to come aboard.
I can't,
I said. I think my face told him something was wrong.
What's the matter?
He said as he climbed out from behind the wheel. He got off the bus and crouched down in front of me.
What's wrong?
I can't take your bus no more, I said.
I fought back my tears.
Why not? What happened?
I got lent out. Mom got sick and I got lent out.
I couldn't hold back the tears. Sal put his big arms around me and hugged me.
It's all right, son. You go right ahead and cry. It's all right.
I cried into his chest.
But, boys aren't supposed to cry.
Anyone who feels hurt or sad is supposed to cry.
Even boys?
Even boys. He hugged me.
Who's this?
He asked. He lifted Doggy from the top of the bag.
That's Doggy.
I sniffled back my tears.
Well, hello, Doggy.
He boomed out a laugh.
Where'd you get him?
From the home of the angels.
Oh, so he's one of us.
He tweaked his nose.
Yeah, he's one of us.
I smiled.
Hey, Sal.
I turned serious.
Yes?
I ain't gonna get to see you no more.
Why not? You're seeing me now, aren't you?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, but nothing. Your mom won't be sick forever. Until she's well, I'll see you right here, whenever you get the chance.
I can see you every day.
Sure, why not? You see, you got yourself all upset for nothing.
He hugged me once more.
I have to go now. We don't want all these people late for dinner.
He laughed. He was referring to the people on his bus.
No, we don't want that.
I'll see you tomorrow, he said.
He tweaked Doggy's nose again.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
He climbed aboard his bus and slipped back into his seat. He winked as he closed the doors. I watched Sal's bus until it went up and over the rise in the road. Even though I could no longer see it, I had the strangest feeling part of me was still on the bus with Sal. I shook my body. I had never felt anything like that before. I crossed the street to catch the bus that would take me to the Frasers.
I thought I heard someone come in,
Martha said as she poked her head into the hallway.
It's only me,
I said.
What you mean only you?
She chuckled.
Gets ready for dinner, she said. We're gonna have Master Donald's fish.
Oh, yeah. How's my shark?
Land sakes, she laughed. He's fine. I fed him some bread, and it's like he done never eats before.
Oh, good.
I scrambled to my feet and went into the bedroom to get ready for dinner. By the time I reached the dining room, everyone was already at the table. Martha had placed a bowl of soup down for me. I started to eat.
I saw the shark on the porch, Jennings, Mr. Fraser said.
I beamed with excitement. I was sure Mr. Fraser would be proud of me.
After dinner, I'll take you down to the bay and we'll throw him back.
I was shocked. My face showed it.
We can't keep a shark in the house. He won't live.
I tried to tell him he couldn't keep it,
Donald added.
But what can you do? He's just a dumb kid.
Now be nice, Mrs. Fraser said.
A shark needs salt water, Jennings. He won't last in that pail.
But
Donald will take you fishing again, and he'll teach you how to catch a real fish. Like the one he caught.
I glared at Donald. He put his face into his soup bowl. He made some slurping sounds.
Better fish?
I said.
Yes, Mr. Fraser said. He'll teach you how to catch a better fish.
We can go tomorrow,
Donald said.
No thanks.
Don't you like fishing?
Mrs. Fraser asked.
Yes, ma'am. But what good is going if you can't tell nobody you went?
What's that?
Mr. Fraser asked.
Nothing,
I mumbled. I finished eating my soup.
Martha served the fish. I shot another glance in Donald's direction, but it was no use. His head was still in his food.
We were nearing the end of dinner when my elbow slipped from the edge of the table and my head fell. I was falling off to sleep without realizing it.
Martha,
Mr. Fraser said, why not take Jennings to bed? I'll take care of the shark myself. Martha guided me away from the table. My eyes were almost closed. She led me to the bedroom where I flopped down onto the bed. She began to undress me.
I unpacked the bag you brought home, Master Jennings.
My eyes popped open.
Here he is,
she chuckled as she handed me Doggy. I took him from her outstretched hand and cuddled him to my cheek.
Land sakes,
she laughed.
Now I got me two babies to care for.
I heard her chuckles fade into my dreams. I saw Sal after school every day. I could only be with him for about 5 minutes. It wasn't much, but it was better than nothing. I told him about the Frasers and about Martha. I told him about my room with the little bathroom and about the fireplace. It was good to share stories with Sal. He understood everything I was saying and everything I was feeling. He remembered what it was like to be alone. One afternoon, Sister Gerard gave me two shopping bags full of clothing.
I don't recognize any of these things, Sister,
I said.
Did George bring them?
No, Jennings. I sent a note home with some of the boys in your class who were about your size, she said. Their mothers sent those things for you.
Wow, I said. They're really nice.
I looked through the shirts and pants in the bag.
They're not new, she said, but they'll keep you warm.
They're new to me, Sister. Are all these things for me?
Yes, of course.
I'd never had so many things that were mine and mine alone. I always had to share my things with Larry. No doubt I'd share these things, too, when I got home. My head was full of dreams of how nice I was going to look. I walked the dark streets toward the Fraser's house. The smell of burnt wood in the air made everything seem wonderful. When I reached the house, I went straight to the kitchen and Martha.
Well, now,
she said as she held up a dark brown coat to get a better look at it,
aren't you gonna be the country gentleman?
Martha took both bags from me and sent me to clean up for dinner. I went to my bedroom to talk to Doggy.
And now I won't have to wear any of these raggy things anymore, I told him. Except for my shoes, of course.
He was very happy for me. He couldn't wait to see what I looked like all dressed up. I couldn't either. In the morning, I put on a pair of dark blue pants and a green shirt with two little horses on the pocket. The brown coat Martha first looked at had a belt that tied in front. It was warm and fit pretty well. Martha saw me to the front door and gave me a kiss.
You be sure and remember what everyone says. You hear?
I will.
Martha wants to hear what people say about her baby.
I threw her a kiss when I reached the end of the front walk. She laughed and slapped both of her hands on her thighs. I took the bus to school. I imagined all the people on the bus must have thought I looked real nice. I couldn't wait to show Sal. I had to wait about 15 minutes for his bus to come. It finally did. Sal stepped off the bus and walked past me. He put his hand over his eyes as though he were blocking out the sunlight. He strained to find something. He turned around and saw me.
"Oh, there you are,"
he boomed out with laughter.
"I didn't recognize you."
I couldn't contain my smile.
"Why, you look terrific," he said. "Turn around. Let me get a good look."
I turned full circle.
"You really think I look nice?"
He pinched my cheek and crouched down in front of me.
"You look wonderful," he said. "Now you go on up to school. I want to watch my son from here."
"All right."
He gave me a hug and held me for a moment longer than he usually did. He didn't know it, but I could have stayed in his arms forever. I dashed across Main Street and walked up the hill. There were 5 or 6 boys from my class standing by the black iron fence in front of the school. I knew as I approached they saw me and noticed my nice clothes. One of the boys poked another in the ribs and made a gesture with his head for him to look at me. I smiled.
"Hey, Birch," he yelled. "You're wearing my coat."
"Do you like it?" I asked as I reached him. Some of the boys began laughing.
"If you like some beggar kid wearing your clothes, I guess I like it."
They all began laughing.
"Look at the beggar boy wearing our clothes,"
one of the boys shouted to some others in the schoolyard. My eyes filled with tears, but I fought them off. I bit down on my lip to keep it from trembling.
"Hey, ragpicker, don't you have anything of your own? You got my pants on,"
a boy said from the back row. The kids had me fully encircled. As each kid insulted me, the laughs grew louder. A kid stuck his hand out and grabbed my shirt collar.
"You got my shirt, beggar. Take it off."
I slapped at his hand. He punched me full in the face. As I hurled backward into some of the kids behind me, I bit into my lip. The blood spurted out and down my chin. I regained my feet and lunged at him. Another kid grabbed my arm and spun me around. The crowd parted as I hit the boy who'd spun me. I caught him on the top of his head. He pushed back at me, knocking me to the ground. I could hear the chants,
"Beggar! Beggar!"
as I toppled backward off the curb into the gutter. My left hand and wrist struck a car's license plate, and a gush of blood shot from my wrist. I gathered myself up and began tearing at the belt tie of the coat until it freed me. I ripped off the coat and flung it into the jeering crowd. My blood splattered over the faces of some of the kids nearest to me. The chanting stopped. I tore open the front of my shirt. Blood was everywhere. I had the shirt half off when Sal's arms closed around me.
"I got you, son. I got you."
He lifted me up and turned me in one motion. I came down with my face flush against his chest. I cried uncontrollably. The blood from my wrist poured all over his shoulder and down his back.
"Get the hell out of my way,"
he yelled at someone. He carried me into the school.
"What happened?"
I heard the voice of Sister Regina.
"I don't know," Sal said. "I need a towel or something."
"Take him in here," someone else said. Sal laid me down on a couch. There was a nurse over me. She was looking at my wrist.
"This'll need stitching."
I couldn't speak. I was crying too hard. I had a difficult time catching my breath.
"Shh. Try to calm down," Sal said.
He held me in his arms and rocked me. A policeman came in with a boy from my class.
"This kid said they were teasing him, calling him a beggar. Who is he?"
"He's my son,"
Sal said angrily.
"Let's get him to the hospital," the nurse said.
Sal lifted me in his arms.
"This is some damn school you got here," he said. "A bunch of dirty, rotten kids."
He carried me out of the school and through a huge crowd of kids. He placed me in the back of the police car and got in after me. We drove off. Sal stayed with me until Mr. Fraser came.
"Sal, why did they do that?" I asked.
"I don't know, son."
Sometimes it's just easier to be mean than it is to be kind, I guess.